Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Parents Coaching Parents Network with your host, M.H. Scott. This is a one-hour interactive talk show. We'll talk college recruiting, athletic scholarships, and much more. Here's your host, M.H. Scott.
Hey, welcome to another Parents Coach Parents Network show. I am your host, M.H. Scott. And folks, if this conversation doesn't draw you in, I'm not sure what it's going to take. Well, first and foremost, I'd like to say happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there that's checking us out here on Blog Talk Radio and the Parents Coach Parents Network. And, you know, those that have had young athletes to come through the process and still in the process and still part of the game. And those of you that simply, hey, you don't have any athletes, but you're just here to support, we appreciate you just as much. But like I said, I got a conversation today that I'm hoping is going to draw you in. If it doesn't draw you in, I'm not sure. I'm going to be puzzled. I'm really and truly going to be baffled because I'm going to be at the point of, okay, what brings them to the table? And I understand that it's Mother's Day and everything, and some of you are out there getting fed very well because y'all decide to go out to dinner, or, hey, with this beautiful day that it is, here on the East Coast, from what I see, you may be out there on the grill trying to do something. That way you can maintain a little social distance and get some fresh air all at the same time. But all well, fine and dandy. I understand it. I got some things I need to talk about. So if you don't get a chance to catch us live here today from 3 to 4, then check out the replay. Go back, look at the archive version, pull us up, listen to see what we're talking about and whether or not this conversation may be relevant to you, may be relevant to you and your athlete, more importantly to your athlete. But I say to you because we as concerned, protective, nurturing parents, you know, we want to make sure that, hey, every I is dotted and every T is crossed as it pertains to our children as athletes. You know, that's something that we really and truly have to say each and every time because of the simple fact that, hey, believe it or not, them jokers been sitting up in our house. We've been taking care of them for the last, you know, 16, 17, you know, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21 years, whatever. And I'm not saying that it's time for them to start taking care of you. I'm saying that it's time for them to start showing some of the things that you have instilled in them and allow them to bring that to the forefront, allowing them to shine, let their light so shine so that all men may see their good works. Hey, I ain't preaching today. I'm just sharing a little something with you. You know, that's all I'm saying. But, you know, as I look at this situation and I think about this situation, it comes to mind when I think about a young man that put together a piece for me. Oh, man, some 10 years ago, he put this piece together for me. But this piece is relevant till today. It's my man, Mr. Keith Wright, University of Harvard basketball player, still out there playing the game, some 8-9 years later, and still haven't evolved in making things happen within his community. I'm talking about that little piece called College Experience. Where you at, Keith?
Student of the game, had people frontin' talk about me, but that ain't no thing. See, I knew I would make it with the knowledge in my brain, and if I succeed with that, then B-Ball would do the same. I can't complain, the situation that I'm in, meeting different connects that turn out to be my friends. I know it'll turn out great when my 4 years come to an end, and when the ball starts bouncing on my diploma out the pen, but I'm hating then. Playing ball is just a small part. With this education, I have a great start. And if you work hard for the teachers, they might be showing love in the stands or in the bleachers. I'm only preaching. I'm just trying to spit knowledge and acknowledge opportunities at your disposal when you get to college. I use ball as a tool. Now every day I'm living and I'm making smart cool. That's how I do.
Keith said he's making smart cool. Making smart cool. That's how he do. And hey, you know what? That's a good way to live. A good philosophy to have. You know, if every one of our children pushed upon that attitude, man, we wouldn't have anything to do. Our work would be done. Our work would be in hand. It'd be a piece of cake. It'd be smooth sailing, you know? Because simple fact that they'd be focused on making smart cool. Ain't nothing wrong with that. Ain't nothing wrong with that. I can go with that. Go ahead, Keith. Do your thing. Continue to do your thing, young man. Continue to do your thing. But, you know, what I want to talk about here today is something that I came across, and it was, to me, it was kind of disturbing. And I say that because the simple fact that this subject was something that I once upon a time brought up in my book. You know, this subject is something that came up in my book one time before because I talked about it, and I believe it was chapter 2. And as I flip through these pages here, I'll tell you here in a second. I may even be able to pull out the exact page. But I talked about it in chapter 2. In chapter 2, we talked about how to navigate the predatory recruitment tactics. But one particular point I want to stress and bring to your attention is a point that I brought up about a sports analyst that was on a noted talk show. And I think I'm all the way over here on page, those of you that want to follow me, I'm on page 44. And where I talked about many coaches see our children as things to be bought or sold. Let me hit you with that one more time. Many coaches see our children, things to be brought or sold, bought or sold. Now, I got a problem with that, and I hope that you have a problem with that. And I go on to say, recently, as I watched the syndicated sports show, The Herd, and yeah, I'm calling them out, watched The Herd guest Joel Klatt, K-L-A-T-T, a college football analyst for Fox Sports, referred to the young athletes as commodities, as commodities. Now, I go on and talk a little bit more about that, but the point I want to bring up to you is, now, why are you referring to our athletes as commodities? why is it that our athletes would even, excuse me, why is it that our athletes would even be close to representing something that you look at as something that is very easily brought or sold? A commodity. Come on now. And I go into a little definition on what we talk about when I talk about what is a commodity. But one thing I want to bring to your attention, that language is used in a covert way. That language is used in a covert way. And it bothers me. And I hope that it bothers you. And if it bothers you to the point where you want to join in on this conversation today, by all means, please do join us. Give us a call at area code 516-453-9932. Okay, you may not have caught it the first time. Area code 516-453-9932. And I put that number out there for you to join this conversation because I know that there's something that you may have heard that you want to add or something that you may want to address. I hope that there's something that you may want to address because I don't think it's in nobody's place and should be in nobody's mouth to refer to our athletes as commodities or anything else close to it. And, you know, as I think about a commodity, I'm thinking about a piece of livestock sitting up there on the auction block somewhere, you know, and you're just simply looking at this piece of livestock and saying, hey, you know, we can buy, sell, trade, or do whatever we need to do with this piece of livestock. You know, and I hate to take it to that in that direction, but, you know, that takes us all the way over to slavery. You know, because that's the way they looked at, you know, the folks back then. They looked at them from the standpoint of being a piece of livestock, a piece of, you know, a piece of property that's being bought and sold. And I don't really and truly think that that's a way to refer to our children. Well, what made me bring this conversation back up this week, because we just recently had the NFL draft. And the NFL draft, it was made known that there wasn't one athlete from an HBCU that was drafted this year. Now, no. Let's not get it twisted. Let's not get upset. Let's not, you know, get into a situation where we get our knickers all tied up. No, we're not trying to do that. I want to bring to the point that there was no athlete from an HBCU that hit the draft board. Now, is that to say that there's no athlete that will receive a contract? Is that to say that an athlete can't end up as a free agent and slide in there? Nope, I'm not saying that. That is not what I'm saying. I'm simply saying that there's no athlete that was drafted by the NFL into their draft board. Shout out to once again to all the mothers out there that's checking us out today. Again, if you want to join in on the conversation, 516-453-9932, 516-453-9932. This conversation is open because we want to talk about some things that may be of interest to you. You know, and as I'm thinking about this here statement that was made, you know, while none of these athletes were drafted, you know, one thing that comes to mind is I think about our quarterbacks, our young men that are, you know, in quarterback position. Those young men oftentimes are looked at differently
And is that differently in a good way, or is that differently in a questionable way? Well, I would want to say that that differently is in a questionable way. And I say that because I want to share this with you. I'm thinking about these young athletes. And all these athletes have had very great careers in college. All of them. If they even made it to their fourth year or fifth year in college and have played football throughout that time period, oh man, I'd be willing to bet every single one of them had a phenomenal career. Had a phenomenal career. Now, it may not have been the career that you may want to have seen, but I'd be willing to bet that it was a career that, you know, that definitely sent a message and said, hey, you know, we did something. We made a mark. We made a stance. We put our names on the board. What I want to share with you this afternoon, what I really and truly want to share with you this afternoon, I want to share with you a statement that I came across. Now, this takes it way back to 1995. And, you know, somebody may say, well, why are we going way back that far? Why are we even trying to touch on 1995 or what happened in 1995? Well, it was going on back in 1995, and guess what? Newsflash, it's still relevant today. It's still relevant today. Scouts that are out there that are looking at these young men for the NFL draft still has this same thought or this same mindset. Now, is this going to turn into a love-hate situation, or is this going to turn into a us-against-them situation, or is this going to turn into a well, they don't want to treat black athletes fair and all? No, that's not what I'm saying. Come on, let's not get it wrong. Let's not get it twisted. But I do want to bring it to your attention so that we can start working on changing the narrative of how they speak about our children. In 1995, it found evidence of professional scouts, professional NFL scouts, refusing to observe black athletes in a central role. Central role being that role of a quarterback. That role of a quarterback, that's what they consider a central role. That's that, like that code language. Excuse me, I had to wet my whistle. That's like that code language in a central role. Or roles that require some level of, hear me out, some level of intelligence in order to make a strategic play. Some level of intelligence in order to make a strategic play. Now, that by itself is disturbing, because we are talking about a college athlete. We are talking about somebody that's going into the classroom and doing what he needs to do on a regular basis. So there is some level of intelligence there. You know, what amazes me, the level of intelligence was good enough and great enough to keep him on the team and keep him in that position. He had to have some type of intelligence. And let's not throw out the line, well, yeah, he was able to learn the playbook, or the playbook had to be restructured. And okay, if he came up with this complex playbook, that you need to have a degree in calculus in order to understand it, of course you're going to make sure that the athlete that you want to fulfill that position understands it. And everybody else, you're going to tell them to go out there and learn it. But we all know there's only just a handful of plays that you really and truly could do in football anyway. Everything else has options running off of that. So let's not make it seem like our children aren't able to comprehend or step on the field with some level of intelligence in order to make a strategic play. And the person that did this research, but named Lewis argues that many coaches kept black athletes out of the position of leadership due to the belief that blacks tend to be poor leaders. And that, I'm going to run that by you one more time. Lewis is the one that did this piece back in 1995. Research it for yourself. I'm just putting out the information, but I want you to research it for yourself. Lewis argues that many coaches kept black athletes out of the position of leadership due to the belief that blacks tend to be poor leaders, do not think quick enough, or do not perform well under pressure. Now, this was back in 1995. Of course, there has been several phenomenal black athletes that has stepped up since then, but it is a struggle for them to get to that position. And there have been a number of young men that was good athletes, excellent quarterbacks, but for whatever reason ended up getting to college, and now the college coach wants to change their position. I knew several young men that had the talent that, hey, I know one young man I'm thinking about right now. To me, he was an African-American version of a Ben Roethlisberger. Big Ben, yes. Had the mechanics, had the speed, the whole works. Had the durability, the whole works. I probably say he even had a little bit more toughness, because I know where the young man came from. But he got to college, and all of a sudden, the college coach wanted to change his position. Let's make you a fullback. Let's put the ball in your hand, just let you run it. Give us a couple yards, because you're a big boy. I don't worry about your arm. You know, that put that, don't worry about that. We just need your arms just to carry this ball. Really? I honestly believe the young man really and truly could have made it because of, oh, man, he was just awesome. He was just awesome. So the college coach derailed him. The college coach probably had that same mindset of this 1995 article, because you got to think now. A lot of the college coaches, they look for a stereotypical type player, and they ride with that player because that player fits best into their system, into their system. But, you know, somebody may say, well, hey, you know, he came across that article, it just so happened to be this year during the time of the draft, and it ain't relevant to what's going on today. It's still happening today. It's still happening today. You know, as we look at this, here's another quote. A glaring exception to this consistent focus on the body and its ability to come with the evaluation of quarterbacks. Its ability comes with the evaluation of, you know, they look at a black athlete and look at what's going on with his body. How fast is he? You know, does he have one of them big arms, as they call it? But if he's not the traditional guy that wants to just stay in the pocket, as they want to refer to, just stay in the pocket type quarterback, then they'll add another name to him. They'll call him something else. They'll come up with a new term to describe him. While athleticism and arm strength are key elements of a quarterback, value is so strong leadership and character, as well as intelligence. So if that's the case, you're telling me that these young athletes have no intelligence? I'm still puzzled by that. I am still so puzzled by whoever put this information together. If they thought that this information that they was putting together really and truly had any truth to it. You know, go back and take a look. Go back and look at, you know, how many true African-American quarterbacks. And see, they want to say that, you know, African-American quarterback, no, he's not a good leader because the first thing he want to think about is, you know, once it gets too hot for him in the pocket, okay, well, if the guys on the line ain't blocking for him, then he ain't going to stand there and just take a hit. If he can use his legs to get out of the pocket, then he's going to do that, i.e. Michael Vick, i.e. Tyrod Taylor, i.e. Dak Prescott, i.e. My boy RG3. Come on now. They ain't going to just stand there and take a hit if your line is breaking down on you. But see, you know, it's the whole thing of them being protected. Them being protected. And you look at the mindset, look at the dynamics of the field and how the field is set up. You got a big, robust, strong group of young men that's holding down the line. Holding down the offensive line. Now, these boys by no means are no lightweights. These boys are big, sturdy fellas. And they're holding down the offensive line. And if you think back a few years ago, they were holding down this offensive line to protect their leader, who was this white quarterback that was standing behind them, giving them direction. Yes, we have moved away from that somewhat, but not enough. Because the language is still out there. The narrative is still being shared. And in some cases, the views are still the same. Is it fair to our athletes? No, it's not. And let's not pretend that it is. And let's not say, well, we're not going to make this a black and white thing. No, we're not. Hopefully we can make this an equitable thing. I didn't say equal. I said equitable. Big difference. I need you to really and truly look into that. And understand that there is a big difference. Because if I'm just making this an equal thing, okay, I'm getting everybody a chance to get out there on the field and show what they're worth. But at the same time, am I really and truly making the playing field equitable? Is everybody able to see it and do what they need to do on it from a true perspective of giving a fair chance? That's all I want to know. That's all I want to know. So, folks, I need for you to just take a look at some of these conversations that's going on, listening to some of these sports talk shows, to include this one, if you want to call this a sports talk show. Listen to it and see if you hear any language that sounds out of the ordinary. when you're talking about the level of intelligence, and what I want you to hear for, what I want you to listen for, when they're talking about or describing, if you turn it on right now, and they talk about what teams pick what athletes in the draft, NFL channel, and you listening to it, now you'll know that when they're talking about a white quarterback, they'll talk about his level of intelligence. They'll talk about his leadership. You know, they'll talk about all those tangible things. Command and control. The whole works. You know, but when you're talking about a black quarterback, and sometimes I'm not saying that these are only white sports reporters that's talking about it. I've seen it come from both sides. But when you're talking about a black quarterback, you're talking about what? You're talking about his arm strength, his quickness, his agility, his foot speed, all these physical things. But you're not giving him any credit for his command and control. You're not giving him any credit for his leadership in or out of the locker room. Start listening for that. Start listening for little key and buzzwords like commodity. And what's the athlete ceiling? You know, what's this institution's return on investment? No, what is our return on investment? These are our children you're talking about. What is this institution going to do as our return on investment? Our children went to your institution. What is our return on investment? Return on investment at a bare minimum should be to ensure that they graduate with a degree. Now, some of you may say, hey, well, they do graduate with a degree. I need you to check the latest reports, folks. Check the latest reports. I don't know of too many institutions that's turned out 100% graduation rate. 100% graduation rate. It has gotten better over the years, but a few years back, it was down to about 50-something percent. And it wasn't until recently when the Knight Commission had put some pressure on the NCAA to do something about it, then that's when it popped up to, I think it's up to about 80-something percent. And I want you to check this out. Check this out. Do your research. Do some fact-finding. Look at somebody's data set. And I want you to tell me. You can call in next week, 516-453-9932. Call in next week and say, hey, you didn't know what you were talking about. You was way off base. You didn't have a clue. But I want you to check it out. You know, they had a prominent college coach that had a number of titles up there at University of Connecticut, Calhoun. What was Calhoun's graduation rate? What was his graduation rate? Now, he wasn't turning out no major numbers of all his players leaving at the same time going into the draft. Now, he did have a number of players that did go into the draft and had successful careers, so on and so forth. But what was his graduation rate? Now, he was coaching long before we were doing a whole lot of this one-and-done stuff. Long before. But what was his graduation rate? What is, hey, you know, one of the prominent guys that's out there now. I know he has a whole lot of one-and-dones come through his program. But what is his graduation rate? I know he got some seniors that's hanging around there because everybody ain't one and done, two and done, or three and done. Even if they three and done, they should still have enough time to get that, finish up and get that degree done, get that degree completed. What is old Mr. Man Slick himself? Oh, I can't even think of his name. It done jumped clear out of my head. University of Kentucky's coach, Calipari. What's his graduation rate? What is his graduation rate? I'm just asking. You got a whole bunch of these coaches out here that you talk about that's just, you know, prime time, on TV, in your face. What is their graduation rate? The Krzyzewskis, the Williams, the Tiffins, the what's the guy named down there in Clemson? Dabo Sweeney. Rick Pitino. You know, them some of the names that was out here hot and hot. What is a Saban's? What's his graduation rate? I don't know. Maybe I'll look him up and share him with you come next week. But that's just something interesting that came to mind as I was thinking about how these narratives are played out, how these conversations are played out when they're talking about athletes. We're primarily focused on athletes of color. And if you notice, I didn't use the term student athlete because I stay away from that term. And, you know, I always say that, and then I turn around and say, you know, that's a whole nother show. But this is the show. This is the show. You know, they got away from the term student athlete back when the first NCAA president was in office. He got away from the term, he incorporated the term, student athlete to make sure that you fully understand and stress the point. And now we're walking around here regurgitating the same thing that we heard him say, that they're students first and athletes second. Well, if that's the case, and you've heard many folks argue this point here. If that's the case, if there are students first and athletes second, what if an athlete decided to say during March Madness that, hey, coach, I got this exam I need to study for. I can't make it to practice until about 4:30, 5 o'clock, knowing that practice starts at 3. What if an athlete said that? Or what if he said, well, coach, you know, I got two exams this week back to back. I'm just going to have to sit out this week. And especially if he or she was a key player on the team, what would be the reaction of that coach? What would be the reaction of that athletic staff, the athletic department, athletic director, university president? What will be their reaction? But we're pushing the narrative of their students first. Their students first. So if their students first, allow them to be students. If they want to sit out, let them sit out and still maintain their scholarship. Let them have the same and fair and equal rights as all other students on that campus. A student that's attending a university or institution on a musical scholarship can go out and get a part-time gig playing in some club over the weekend. and a couple times during the week and get paid. Can an athlete do the same thing? No. A student that's out there that's pursuing a scholarship in fashion design can go out and get them a part-time gig job in that industry just to make sure that that's what he or she wants to do. Can an athlete do the same thing? No. I ain't talking about no internships. I'm talking about a job, J-O-B. I'm talking about employment. That's what I'm talking about. So if that's the case, then why can't a basketball player do the same thing? Why can't a football player do the same thing? Because they're on scholarships, but they're students. You should be fair treatment just like all other students. The fair treatment just like all other students. That's all I'm saying. There shouldn't be no disparity in whether or not a basketball or a football player can do something that any other student is doing at his or her institution. That's what you call fairness. But due to that mystical code language and all other things that goes on, oftentimes those athletes get slighted. They get slighted. Why do they get slighted? Because of the simple fact that the system sets them up to slight them, which truly isn't fair. Truly, it isn't fair. That's all I'm saying. You want to join in on this conversation, 516-453-9932. 516-453-9932. And we're just talking about how do they refer to our students. How do they, our children. See, every now and then, it's been ingrained in me for so long, every now and then it slips out. It slips out, but I really want to refer to them as our children, because when we start referring to them as our children, we look at them all together differently. We look at them all together differently, and we understand that, hey, these are our children. We have to be our children's biggest advocates. You know, I was listening to a show this morning. And when listening to this show, the conversation came up about this young lady named Olivia, Olivia Moultrie. Who said Olivia Pope? Olivia Moultrie. Some years ago, her and her family, parents, decided to take a chance and get her plugged into a professional women's soccer league. Yeah, I said professional women's soccer league. Now, per this league, she is not able to play officially until she's 18. Now, she's been with this program since she was 13. She is now 15. So that means she still got 3 years to go before she can officially hit the field. She's been out there playing. She's played in some exhibition games and all this old kind of stuff, and some scrimmages or whatever. But she hasn't officially hit the field as a professional player. So, here comes the Vultures. Or, should I say, here comes the Sports Apparel Company. Nike gets wind of it. Pap Centaur, get her out, you know, get her, you know, underneath her wing, their wing, and now she has a Nike contract. But she hasn't officially played for this team yet. So you're on the bench or hanging around this professional team since about the age of 13, not knowing what true direction you're going to be able to go in as far as being able to play. Because by the time she rolls around and by the time she's 18, newsflash, she may not possess that skill no more. Or what she was doing back there at 13 may be past news. Past news. One thing that came to my mind, and one thing that puzzled me with this particular situation. What was the parents thinking? And I'm not saying this as a joke. I'm saying this in all sincerity. This is not by no means a joke. This is the most sincere question I can possibly ask. What was the parents thinking? And I say that because when this young lady signed with this team, and I don't know if she's receiving any type of compensation or not. And maybe I can research that and provide some insight for you. But when this young lady signed with this team, she forfeited any opportunity that she would have had to play high school. So you can remember, I said she was 13 when she signed with the team. So that was what, eighth grade? Somewhere around there? So she forfeited playing high school. Then she forfeited, although she haven't made it there yet, I guess if she's receiving any type of compensation from this team, which she probably is, now she has forfeited any opportunity to play at the collegiate level. So I'm not sure exactly who is guiding her or assisting her or just coaching her, mentoring her. But I think somebody is definitely sending her in a very questionable direction. A very questionable direction. And I just wanted to add that piece in there because that is something else that we as parents need to be aware of. That's not something that, you know, we could just say, okay, well, hey, it happens, whatever. No. She can go to college. You know, she's in high school now. She could finish that and turn around and go to college. But she could have went to college probably, more than likely, I'd be willing to bet very easily on a college scholarship playing soccer if she was just that good. Now, I'm going to have to go out there and see if there's any video on this young lady and see if I can find some video. And if I can, then I want to definitely be able to post it on the Parents Coach and Parents Network page on Facebook just to say, hey, here she is. Now, to my understanding, a young man can go out there and play professional soccer as early as age 15. We all remember the great Freddie Adu. Freddie played for the D.C. team. I forgot the name of the team right off. But Freddie played for the D.C. team. And in playing for that team, Freddie, hey, was able to do some things. But you know, one thing I say about Freddie, I always thought Freddie was a little bit older than what they say he was. They say Freddie was only 14. But Freddie looked like he aged quite a bit. Freddie looked like a seasoned vet at the age of 14. But who am I to judge? Because the man came from probably a very trying childhood as a young man, coming from the country he come from. But that was interesting. So the question is, why can't this young lady here play now? She's 15. Well, the Women's Soccer League says no. They say 18. Whereas the Men's Soccer League says, hey, come on at 14. Is there a difference in the body, in the makeup, in the structure, and what a 14-year-old can take compared to what a 13, 14, 15-year-old girl? She's probably every bit of, let me see if I can find a physical picture of her. Because I'd be willing to bet she's probably every bit of 97 pounds, somewhere around there. And I just threw out, just came up with a number. But she's probably every bit of 90-something pounds. Meanwhile, you have some grown women out there that's playing soccer that could be close to pushing up on easy 150 or better. And I'm saying 150 or better on a very light way and very nice way. Well, when we talk about muscle mass and we talk about size and everything else, you know, these ladies could be easily at, you know, high side of 170. All depends on, you know, height, weight, and all these other things. So I'm looking at this young lady. And as I'm looking at her picture here, okay, she looks like, let me see. Oh, what happened to the picture? Didn't want to pull up. Okay, let's go to some images here. And as I'm looking at these images, it's fairly decent size, but you can tell she's still a child. The pictures I'm looking at, she's on the field. Well, one picture, she's actually on the field. It looked like she may be on the field with some women. And if she's on the field with some women, then it is a clear indication that she is undersized. A clear indication that she is undersized. So I am not sure exactly what she plans to do or how she plans to get through this situation, but definitely I don't think she want to be out there amongst no grown women. Let me see. Is this her family? No, that's another family. Yeah, but as I'm looking at her, and it shows her at the age of 15, they says soccer phenom. I'm looking at her thighs. You know, most soccer players have those thighs. Hers is underdeveloped. Now, she may have the foot speed and can do all the little tricks and all that kind of stuff right now, and may not even have the foot speed. But as I'm looking at this picture right here, yeah, she is a little underdeveloped. So I don't think it would be in the best interest of her or her family to try to get her or push her to get out there and continue to play
continue to play on this here soccer program. Well, folks, you know what? Our time, oh man, has really snuck up on us. I just don't believe it. Am I just that long-winded that I just got on here and just talked for probably a straight hour with no commercials, no nothing, and just rattled off, and we down to about the last under 5 minutes left? But I just want to reemphasize something I said. Folks, listen to the language on how they describe our children. I need you to be very attentive in that area, because the language that they are using is detrimental. It's a cold language. It's a language that, you know, they use to describe everything else except for human beings, you know, or they'll say little, as the children would say, little slick stuff. Demeaning, when you talk about someone's not intelligent enough, has no command and control, can't make no strategic decisions. And come on now, really? This person probably has more capabilities than you would ever think, but yet and still, you're going to downplay him because he don't fit your stereotypical model of what you want to have as a quarterback? That's not right. That's not fair. So we need to look at that. We need to keep our eyes and ears open for it. And anytime you hear about it, please post it up on the Parents Coach and Parents Network page on Facebook, PCP Network on Instagram and Twitter. And we want to start tracking how they describe our children that's involved in sports. Hey, folks, you know, if nothing else, this has been M.H. Scott, the host of the Parents Coach and Parents Network. You can find us here every Sunday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Every Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we're here just to get information out to you about what? About what's going on with our children involved in sports. Well, you know, I like to let my man, Mr. Keith Wright, go ahead and close us out, you know, but I just want you to hear, you know, just that little piece. You know, we're going to roll with the jingle and then let Keith close us out. And, hey, y'all have a great and happy Mother's Day. Take it away. Where's the jingle?
Guys, athletes, scholarship mentors.